Everybody, this is the Georgia Songbirds, and we are here with Mr. Billy Litz from Hustle Souls.
Yeah,
Right?
good to be here. Thanks for having me.
No, thank you for coming on, brother. So introduce yourself. Tell everybody a little bit about you.
Yeah, my name is Billy Litz. Hustle Souls is the band that I sing in, write songs for, and we're based out of Asheville, North Carolina. We do a lot of different music, but we're mostly like rooted in like the sounds of like 60s and 70s soul music, but we also veer off into like some Americana and singer-songwriter style stuff as well with like our most recent release.
Okay. Yeah, see, I do always audio and pre-records, so you guys can't see behind him, but he's got some Miles Davis behind him. Who do you have on his albums behind you?
Oh man, who's up here? So we got Miles Davis here, Roberta Flack. This is Art Farmer and Benny Golson. I'm a trumpet player, so Art Farmer is one of my favorite trumpet players. That's Joni Mitchell. And then I'm a big fan of New Orleans music, so I got Dr. John, Louis Armstrong, and then the only like modern album over there is a Big Thief album.
Okay.
Yeah.
You said you play trumpet, right? Is that what I heard?
Yeah. Yeah.
What? Now, I love jazz type music. When I play, like with my band, I play, we have like a saxophone that comes in. That's the only
Yeah.
brass instrument we can bring in. But I love the sound of like brass with electric. It's just John Cafferty and the Beaver Brown Band is probably my favorite band.
Yeah. So I mean, I guess it's because I played trumpet, for my whole life. I probably would have been raised more on like Nirvana and alternative rock and stuff, but I was playing trumpet in school band, and it just what wasn't, I wasn't represented in popular music at the time, and so I got into jazz music pretty early. But I've recently just like really fallen deep into like the New Orleans catalog and the Meters and Lee Dorsey and Dr. John and the Neville Brothers and Alan Toussaint and that whole scene. And we brought a couple horn players on for some shows, and now we've gotten hooked on it, and we can't do it without them anymore. So we're bringing them out to basically every show now. So the horns and the brass is a big part of what we do these days.
See, I like that. I love that style of music. And when it's done right, it to me, there's that New Orleans jazz, that Dixie sound. I love it. It's great.
Yeah, I used to talk about it more than I played it, but now I'm actually starting to it's starting to seep its way into our band. But I used to say like the straight up like traditional jazz, trad jazz, Dixieland era stuff. It's to me, it's like it's the perfect music because it's just like it's very classy. It's like top notch. You can wear suits to it, but you can also get down and party to it. And it's wild music. It's fun, and it's like it kind of hits, checks a lot more boxes than a lot of genres because it can have a lot of weight to it and be serious and it can be sophisticated, but it can also be simple. It can also just be raw and simple and blues. And you can sit there and as a listening room and sit down and listen to it, or you can get up and dance on tables. And it kind of checks a lot of musical boxes.
Yeah, I mean, well, look what they have Mardi Gras over here.
There you go. Exactly.
You know what they're playing there.
Yeah.
I want to
Yeah,
go
there's
one.
a reason. There's a reason people go.
I want to go one year, but I'm married. I don't think my wife would let me.
Yeah, I just had a baby born on February 18th, and my band was scheduled to play two Mardi Gras shows that day, or not that day, but that weekend. And she came right then, Mardi Gras weekend, and so now next year we're gonna play those shows, and it's gonna be her 1 year birthday party, and eventually we're gonna get her down there to celebrate Mardi Gras for her birthday.
Nice. Congratulations. That's your first
Yeah.
child, you said?
It's my first child, yeah.
Congratulations. I've got a 26-year-old and I've got twins that are 13.
Oh man. Yeah, I got older brothers that are twins. I cannot imagine. I mean my parents had four of us, four boys. We were all under 4 years old at one point, and it's like one is a trip in itself. Two, I can't even imagine.
Yep, we had that when me and my wife, I've been married 14 years. I got this my second marriage, but she wanted a baby. I said, yeah, if you know when I marry you, I'll promise you one, you got to trick me into two. Well, she got her twins. So I remember going to the doctor with her, and they're doing the sonogram and all that ultrasound. And they go, oh, look, there's two heartbeats. I'm like, wait a minute, I only ordered one. She's, well, sweetheart, you got two and you may have three. I'm like, wait, what do you mean may have? How does that work? She goes, what? She says, it's rare, but you can get pregnant while pregnant. And I'm like, that takes the fun out of everything.
Yeah. Oh, if I would have known that, yeah. Oh, man.
So we didn't have three, thank goodness. I mean, two is enough at one time. My oldest son
Yeah.
teases me. He goes, you're so much easier on them than you were me. I'm like, well, son, there's two of them. They kind of take up for each other.
Yeah, I think I got a little bit easy having older brothers that were twins that kind of paved some pathways for me to slide easily through.
Now, is anybody else musical in your family?
Yeah, so my dad, Tony Litz, runs a music store called Victor Litz Music Center. That was his grandfather. He was a jazz guitar player who taught a lot of lessons, and then I started a retail store passed on to my dad. So we kind of grew up in a, I'm not gonna say a musical family. We had a lot of musical instruments around. My dad didn't play music, my mom didn't play music, but we ran a music store. So we just always had guitars and pianos and keyboards and drum sets passing through the house. And we grew up around it, and we were kind of allowed to float in and out of music lessons at our whim, because it was all through my dad's store. And yeah, I got to give a lot of credit to that for me playing music, and all three of my brothers play music.
That's really cool. So, I mean,
Yeah.
I grew up around bikers, so I ride motorcycles.
Yeah,
But
that's good too. But man, my problem with motorcycles is that I think I would love it, and then I would be I'm a little bit accident prone, and I think I like adrenaline, and the combination of I love adrenaline, but I'm accident prone. It's not good for me. So I get injured all the time, and I think of motorcycles, I'm just trying to stay away. But every once in a while, I see like a group of people out. I'm like, because I live in Asheville, North Carolina, we got the Blue Ridge Parkway, and that's like top-notch motorcycle riding. So I think about it sometimes, but so far I've been able to stay away.
Yeah, I think I told my wife because my dad was actually killed on his like 15 years ago. And so I didn't
Oh man,
ride
I'm
for the
sorry.
longest time. And I told my wife, now I'm kind of like you. I'm accident prone. I'm old. I know stuff can happen. I think I would buy like one of those slingshots and just have like her and me beside it. Have you seen those?
Yeah, for sure. I mean,
That.
that looks amazing. It looks like so much fun. Yeah.
Right. And she can drive it too.
There you go. There you go.
Now, you mentioned all the instruments. What can you play? What all instruments can you play?
So trumpet's when I really got into music, and that's still like the main instrument that I put my like instrument focus when I'm workshopping, I'm in the woodshed, I'm working on an instrument. It's usually trumpet. But then I fell in love with songwriting, and that's really what I love the most about music. And the trumpet's got its limitations, so that led me into using what I knew about music theory to clunk out chords on the piano just to get these to write songs. That started in like high school, and then the limitation of the piano is that it's heavy as hell, or you got to plug it in. And so I got acoustic guitar in college, and that ended up taking over the piano as like my main songwriting vehicle. And I think just because the acoustic guitar, just cowboy chords, is like that's just it just sounds great immediately. The piano, you got to really work it to not sound cheesy playing a piano ballad or something. The guitar just Every time I, if I can play a song on guitar, I don't have to work too hard. It doesn't have to be too fancy to make it sound great. And so, I think the guitar is the main like songwriting vehicle for me, and I think for most people, even though I'm way more competent on the piano, I like the guitar. And then I've got a strange collection of all kinds of instruments in here. I got my resonator, and I got my upright bass, and my trombone, and my banjo, and my musical saw, but I don't know how to play most of them. I just like to have them near me, and every once in a while I pick it up and strum it, but I can't really make too much listenable music on the saw or the banjo.
See, now here behind me, I've got the my studio. I'm building a studio.
Yeah, I see it. It looks great.
I've got my drums and my keyboard. It's where the band and stuff plays, and we practice and all that. And I'm doing it by hand, so it's taking time and money, and I run out of both.
Yeah, I know how it goes.
I'm like you. I have a 12 string in there. I got a resonator. I got my bass guitar. I want to get one of those banjo guitars because I don't want to have to relearn how to play. So if I can just get a banjo guitar and play it like a guitar, I'd be okay.
You know, when I first found a banjo, that I got my hands on one, I was loving it, and I was playing. I was listening to a lot of like, I grew up kind of listening to like alt country and Uncle Tupelo, and then like even like some Indian folk stuff. Like Sufjan Stevens was really using a lot of banjo in his stuff, and I love the sound of it. And I was writing songs on it all day, just making up chord shapes. And then somebody was like, "Hey, that's not how you play banjo. You got to do these rolls." And I was. So I sat there and I tried to do the rolls for a couple hours, but I wasn't very good at guitar even, and I couldn't do them to save my life. And so I was like, well, I guess I can't play this thing. And I put it away, and I didn't touch it for 10 years. And now, like, I've just been around music so much more. It's like there's no rules. If it sounds good and you like it, if I strum it the way I play strum an acoustic guitar, nobody can tell me that's wrong. And the rolls are one way to play the banjo, but who knows what I missed out on giving up on it just because somebody told me one day I was doing it wrong.
Well, see, when I learned to play guitar, I learned my grandfather taught me the basics, right? G, C, and D. And I would finger pick because I couldn't hold on to the damn pick. I was like, I'm just gonna finger pick. And so that's how I learned. I would lay in the dark with the guitar on my chest and I'd finger pick. So I wouldn't know where the chords were. I could just feel it. So I love doing that stuff. And I pick up a banjo, but I don't want to have to learn. Like, that's why I'm gonna cheat and get a banjo guitar because I don't want to have to learn the chord progressions or the chord positions.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is, yeah, it's not, don't even think of it as cheating. If it makes some sounds that you like, that's the whole point of it. And, people talk about cheating in music, and it's like, auto tune or make it sampling stuff or something. And it's like, yeah, there's aesthetic reasons why you don't want to use auto tune because it makes it sound too perfect and not raw. But the truth is, it's hard to make a good song, even with every tool in the world. You can put all the best instruments and best instrumentalists in the world in front of me and give me the best engineer and the best producer. And a lot of people have that. And I've had access to that. And it's like, it's still really hard to make something good. So whatever you can do to make it easier or to make, get closer to that sound, there's no cheating. It's like, I just want to make some, you want to make some music that affects yourself or affects other people. And if you use a banjo, guitar, whatever they call it, to do that, I don't think anybody should give you any slack for
I don't care what to do anyway.
it.
Be my guest. Well, then you get a real banjo and you get up here and play with me. Otherwise, shut the hell up.
Exactly. Well, yeah, then you don't need it because somebody else can do it. So,
Right?
yeah.
See, I love that stuff. Now, I'm big on band names because I was listening to your stuff because I was like, trying to find a lot of information on you, get some info. And like I said, with names of bands, I always ask this question because bands and rappers have some of the funniest names. And it's hilarious where they come from. Like mine is Yes Ma'am. That's my band. It's MAM. It stands for middle-aged men. That's what it stands for. So
That's
I
good.
always have to ask, why Hustle Souls? Where did that name come from?
All right, so Hustle Souls is a direct reference to paying homage to Muscle Shoals. And
Okay.
so Fame Studio, Muscle Shoals, Alabama. And when we were forming the band, the documentary about Muscle Shoals, if you haven't seen it, it's a great music documentary, came out. And we fell in love with it as like the people in the band at the time. The whole story of Muscle Shoals, and just that one, a lot of our favorite music, whether it be Wilson Pickett, Aretha Franklin, but then even, a lot of the Lynyrd Skynyrd and Allman Brothers stuff wouldn't happen without Muscle Shoals. We didn't know it came from there. And Muscle Shoals is just a little town that probably should not be very noteworthy. You should drive right through it and not know anything about it. But for some reason, there was a magic spark in the air, and all the stars aligned, and the Rolling Stones are flying in to record there. We fell in love with that story, and we wanted to do, I wanted to do an Americana, like alt country project. My band wanted to push it more into like a more progressive and funk and soulful direction. And I found that like Muscle Shoals is like this swampy gospel meeting of like, what was sounds from like urban, like Detroit R&B Motown music fused with Southern gospel and twang and Southern rock and country music. And it to me, it was just that perfect fusion that I've always wanted to hit, which is this Southern twang soul music. But we've missed the mark every time. We go off in crazy different directions. But Muscle Shoals is always like the North Star that we aim toward.
It's funny. My bassist just told me about that documentary. He was saying, you got to watch this, Jesse. It's great. Because he says, hey, we're going to play at Muscle Shoals one day. I'm like, that would be cool. I mean, I've heard of Muscle Shoals without watching the interview or the documentary, but I hadn't seen it yet.
I don't watch a lot of documentaries. At the time, I was watching more, I guess. But it's a really well-done documentary, and it's just fascinating. Yeah, nobody lives – not nobody, but it's a small town. Mm-hmm. It's a small town in the middle of nowhere, and they were competing with Nashville and L.A. and Detroit and New York, and they were cranking out more hit singles than some of them at times. And it's really cool to see. And then I ended up diverting a road trip to go down and pass through there one day, and it's like – you know, Fame Studios right next to a gas station on the side of the road. Like it still doesn't look like much anyway. It's a cool little town. We went to the downtown. It's a nice place to visit, but you would never think that it changed the shape of American music.
Yeah. It's funny. Those little hole in the wall places are always the one that does it. I mean, cause if you ever been to Nashville and the Bluebird, everybody knows the Bluebird is a hole in the wall. It's literally in a shopping center between a dry cleaners. And I don't know what's on the other side of it, but I remember I got lost and I've said this on the podcast. I was playing there and I'm calling cause I'm lost. Like, okay, I'm actually calling them from the parking lot. I still didn't know they were there. So those places like
that's so amazing. Cool. That's amazing. Yeah. I mean, I think the best art that really shapes the foundation of the next, you know, it comes from the bottom up. It doesn't come from the top down. And so you're not going to have, you know, but I think by the time I see it and hear of it, it's at the top. And so I imagine it in the middle of Times Square or, you know, right on Broadway, but it's coming from real people doing their thing passionately. And that's probably going to be off the beaten path a little bit. I'd say 9 times out of 10.
Well, let's listen to one of your guys' songs right now. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to share the screen so you can see it. And we will, like I said, I'm a songwriter too, so I like to hear stories. So let's pick a song and you tell me the story behind it.
I'm trying to think. We've been talking about New Orleans music and Montana is the one for that. But let's start off with something a little bit. How about Don't Make Me Ask Again?
Okay. And tell me the story behind that one.
Don't Make Me Ask Again is the one song on our newest album that I don't play acoustic guitar on. It's I'm playing a piano on it, and it's kind of referencing to some like New Orleans stuff. I kind of always imagine this song being played in like a really bad motel or like lobby or something like that. It's kind of got that piano lounge vibe to it. But I started having a lot of fun with like wordplay on the song and just not that I don't mess around with, like I like to work words, but I had a lot of fun with these words and didn't take it all that seriously and just started doing some wordplay. But then at the end of the day, the song to me does have a lot of meaning, and it's kind of about putting on a very amiable, happy, self-confident front and finally breaking down and asking for help when you need help and kind of coming to terms with how difficult that is to do and how to kind of break down that mask. So the narrator in the song is kind of full of himself and probably not the most likable character, but you see in the end that it kind of breaks down into nothing into him, you know, pleading for help. And again, this is on the most recent EP that we put out, which is an acoustic EP, which usually we're like a powerhouse soul band. But this, we tried to start everything as small as we could on this one. It's a tiny little lounge environment, but we bring in a marching band at the end of it, and it gets pretty wild.
Well, I can play chess with the generals and I lose the pawn. Make love to Aphrodite all night long. I can sing like Sinatra and I look like him too. It's true. Well, I can clean all the teeth on a crocodile smile, walk the Sahara and swim across the Nile. I can speak in every language that you ever heard, save it. Oh, but honey, I could use a friend. I know it's hard to believe it, so don't make me ask again. That would just be cruel. Well, I can see straight into the future. I can read your poem. I know the secrets of the pyramids. I know David's song. I can wrestle the devil with just my left arm. It's true. Well, I can walk straight into the ballroom and fire the boss, then tie a rope between the buildings and walk right across. I can do my own dishes. I can tie my own shoes. It's true. But honey, I could use a friend. I know it's hard to believe it, so don't make me ask again. That would just be cruel. What if I can be frank, if I can be honest, it's not all true. You see, my days have been burdens, the nights are abuse, and lately I can barely pull myself up out of bed. It's true. Oh, honey, I could use a friend. I know it's hard to believe it, so don't make me ask again. That would just be.
I like that. That's such a unique style. Such a
it's something.
You don't hear that kind of blend anymore. It's really good. I always like to make notes when I'm listening.
Yeah.
Your voice is really good. It reminds me kind of Randy Newman.
Yeah, well, that whole song's kind of in that Randy Newman style. I think he's definitely an artist that he had a lot of fun with words, and he was definitely referencing, you know, lounge jazz music, and but also, you know, singer songwriter tradition. And yeah, I'll take it. Randy Newman's if you're gonna compare me to somebody, I'll take a Randy Newman comparison. That's
see,
all right.
I've got, you can tell I got kids because I just listen to it and think, oh, that's like Toy Story and all those Pixar movies.
Yeah, it's got a kind of childish, whimsical, not too serious nature to it. You know, that song sounds a lot different from a lot of our other stuff. But we're, like I said, we're a little bit all over the place. Where we aim towards something and we land wherever the song goes. And that one wanted to sound like that. So
I've been told I have musical Tourette because when I'm in a studio with the band, like, ooh, let's try steel drums or let's try French horn.
Yeah, exactly. You know, but I think that's, you know, I think that's great. You know, I think I might be a little bit more successful if I could focus it in and hit one sound every time. But I love all kinds of music. I'm from all over the place. And I think chasing down whatever's exciting you at the moment is sometimes the best way to go. And, mm-hmm. you know, that's what was making me excited to create. So that's where we went.
I agree 100%. I think all songwriters are that way. I always call my music mutt music because it drives in so much different stuff from different people.
Yeah. And I, you know, at this day and age, you know, we all have, you know, whether if it's Spotify or Apple or a good record collection from the 30 record stores you can drive to, we've got ears that can listen to, you know, every genre of music from Kentucky bluegrass to Brooklyn hip hop and everything in between, and new and old. It doesn't matter what year it came out of, what country it came from. We've all heard so much music. And so you know, if somebody had just a purely homogenous sound, you know, I don't know how that's possible these days.
Right. I don't. They talk about people don't have attention spans anymore. That's the same thing with music. Yeah. I'm like, ooh, squirrel, you know, guitar, drums. I'm all over the place too.
Yeah.
So who's all in the band? Let's give some of them some love.
Yeah. So I'm play keyboard on the new EP. I play some acoustic guitar. I usually am the lead singer. And then I play some trumpet, and then our electric lead guitar player, Chris Everett, he's the one guy that's been in the band with me since day one, and been through a couple lineup changes with him. And then we have John Taylor, who's on the bass guitar. He's from Orlando, Florida area, and he's our most recent person in the band, but he's been with us for 4 or 5 years before COVID, is Kevin Scott on the drum set. And we all sing together and change up on parts and everything. And but yeah, that's the band.
Okay.
Hold on, I almost forgot. We've got two band members that don't play every single show with us. We got two horn players. Sometimes we're lucky enough to get both of them on our shows. Sometimes we don't get either of them. But one of them lives with us here in Asheville, North Carolina. His name's Justice Mann. Killer trombone player, and then we play out of town a lot, and so we drive up north into Virginia and Maryland, and when we do that, we bring a saxophone player from Virginia named Trevor Hicks, who's been also killing it with us.
See, North Carolina has a lot of great music coming out of it. I do every year. I do a Georgia versus series where we take 8 songwriters from Georgia and put them against 8 songwriters from another state, and we did North Carolina 2 years ago, because it was Alabama this year, Kentucky. So yeah, 2 years ago, North Carolina. And I mean, I met so many people up there. There was Colin Cutler. There's William Neesmith, who I just love his style up there. Sydney Rose. I know I'm forgetting, because there's like 5 other ones that I met. But I mean, there's so much talent coming out of that one area. Dustin Chapman. I mean, all of them.
Yeah, it's. I think that it's overlooked as a state sometimes in the impact that it's had on music. But yeah, I mean, they're from Appalachia to the coast. I mean, it's a great state, and there's a lot of people cranking out all kinds of great music.
Yeah. And see, what I do is, like I said, with this, it's all, I told you before, it's all pre-recorded. So I'll let you know before I release it. But once it's released, then I do the podcast, which this is. I also have a weekly top 10 countdown that I send, not to my radio station, but to other radio stations. I'll put your guys' music in when it comes out. But I'm also trying to set up something for the radio station, where it's, because it's an online radio station, I'm trying to get other listeners and stuff, and it's more based towards singer songwriters. So I want to do like highlight each state. And like I said, North Carolina would be like a week of just North Carolina songwriters. And,
yeah, that's really cool. Yeah.
So I'm adding everybody in. So I've got you listed.
I'm all about it. Yeah.
North Carolina.
Let's go.
So who produces all your music?
Eric Serafin is his name. He's done basically everything that we've ever put out. He is also known as the name Mixer Man, which is an anonymous at the time name that he put on this blog that he started writing back when people did blogs. He was living in LA, working for major labels, putting out major label albums. And he started The Daily Adventures of Mixer Man, which people thought at the time was a real life day by day journal of what it's like to record a band in a major label studio. But it was a fictional satire that was based on like all of his experiences. But it's a hilarious, it was a blog, and at one point I think he had 250,000 people a day reading it, because it kind of caught fire in the music industry. Now it's on Spotify. You can check it out. It's, if you've ever recorded music at your house or in a studio or with a major label, if you're involved in the music industry at all, it is hilarious. Even if you're not that interested in recording technology or anything like that, it's top tier satire. So that's Mixer Man is his like alter ego. But Eric Serafin's his name, and he's phenomenal producer. And you know, he he helps us works with our budget to make sure we can make it happen. And we kind of, we call it kind of guerrilla record making, because we slide into a studio, whatever it is, we capture, you know, as raw, not, we capture the sounds that we make as a band, and we try to work with that. And we spend a lot of time at his house, like fine tuning everything. And his ear is what I really appreciate the most, his attention to detail, but is also his confidence of like, yep, that's a take, moving on, like that's really good, or timing issues, tuning, do it again, and we'll go at it forever until we get it right. But he's been a big help for us in shaping the way I listen to music and the way we make and record music, for sure. So Eric Serafin, he's based in Nashville now. He's not in LA anymore, so he's on the East Coast, not hard to find if anybody's looking for somebody.
Yeah, and that's why I always tell people, with this way I do this, is I encourage you to give shouts out and love to everybody who's in music industry. I have no problem with that. I know some people get kind of weird about like, well, it's kind of competition. Like, no, it's not. I don't care. There's so many people that can do so many different things and are great, and they all should get some kind of acknowledgement. And whether you use them or you don't, at least they know who he is.
Yeah, I mean, it takes a team, it takes a village. It's like I think that's the hardest part about the music. I mean, writing songs is fun. It's like finding the team and finding the time and the money and the people is the hardest resource, I think, to find to bring it to life. And so very grateful for the people who helped me bring these songs into real life.
Now, you're the songwriter, you said. Has the guys kind of got the songwriting bug with you and they didn't want to write with you now?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So we've done some co-writing in the past. It depends on the backlog. It depends on how many songs I've written that I'm excited about. Sometimes I'll finish, you know, 10 songs completely before we have time to work on anything. And if that's the case, we're just going through my songs and just arranging them. But there's definitely times where I bring just much more raw ideas, just seed material, and I got this verse and this melody, but like, let's see where it goes. A lot of times I'll throw stuff at them too. I'll get something. I need a drummer. I need like my guitar chops. I've got like three different rhythms I play, and that's about it. It's either finger pick style, or I do like a bluegrass fast thing, or I do like a funky strum. And it's like, I need a groove on this to see how it's going to feel. When I bring a song at that early stage, we co-write it together. And then we're recording a song right now that's going to be on our next release that our drummer wrote and sings on. And it's great. And so we've had our bass player's been writing some songs as well. And they're really good songwriters as well. So, you know, I think I'm the most obsessed with it. I love writing songs. You know, it's like what I want to be doing all day, every day. So I bring a lot. More frequently I bring songs to the table, but they're all really creative and doing good work and bringing it to the band these days.
Now, you mentioned like music for profession. Do you get to do this for your day job, or do you have to do other jobs too?
Well, I'm involved in music all day, every day. I teach music lessons on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesdays. And then I play a lot of solo gigs around town. We're kind of a tourist town, so I do the breweries and stuff like that on Thursdays and Sundays. And then the band's on the road on the weekends. And I hobbled together some money throughout all of that. And so that's all I do is that. But, you know, it's 7 days a week, all day, every day. But I am very blessed to, you know, to get to the whole point of me being able to do it for a living, though, is so that I would have more time to write songs. And that's never happened. And I still don't have time. And so, you know, I was just before this, I was sitting outside for like 45 minutes because it's nice out. And that's my favorite place and time is outside when it's nice out, write some songs. But that's the only 45 minutes of whole week I spent writing songs, and it's like it's a tragedy to me because I would love to spend 40 hours just writing, but you know, I sneak it in here and there.
Oh yeah, I completely understand, because every time I grab it, my kids will come in, the dogs will come in. I've got like, if you guys ever come down to Georgia and you want to come back on a show, you're more than welcome. Bring the band, we'll do the whole interview, or if it's even just you, You're welcome to. I do a, besides a studio, I have a gazebo outside in the woods that I take. That's where I started the Georgia Songbirds. People would come up to it and they would sit out and we'd talk like we're doing now, and you'd play live and I'd record it like this and pre-record it. So you guys are welcome to do that. But also I'll go up there to songwrite because it's such a nice little area. If you take a look on the Georgia Songbirds Facebook page, there's a picture of a gazebo for the guitar and stuff, chairs. That's the actual gazebo that I use. And the pictures is like, it's like really nice red chairs. And I used to put those up there, but it got such a pain in the butt to drag those chairs from the house. Cause I have like 9.5 acres all.
Oh, total. Wow.
So I mean, it's all family on land. So, but it's from here to the house. It's a good hike. So I had to put it on a trailer and carry it up there. And so somebody came up there one time and I got tired of taking the red chairs. And said, "Where's the red chairs?" Jesse, I'm like, "I don't bring those out anymore. They're such a pain in the butt."
We might take you up on that that offer. We do get down south a little bit and working our way through Georgia and Florida in the fall, maybe in the early winter, late fall. So we'd love to make it happen. And yeah, I for some reason I can write music inside. I got all my instruments in my room and I can write music inside, but when a lot of times I start with like, at least the seed is going to be a melody and a harmony. And then, but when it comes time to write the lyrics, I legitimately don't think I could do it inside. And like, I have to wait till I've got a good chunk of time and I go outside. Every time I write lyrics, it's outside now. And, you know, I'm not, you know, I like going outside in nature, but that's like basically all I ever do outside in nature. I go sit there. But for some reason, that's the only time I can really get deep into the words.
I know when I was first playing guitar and learning how to play and write at the same time, I would walk outside with the guitar. I'd walk around the yard and play, just play and sing with it, just so I could get used to standing with the guitar and playing. So I totally understand that. I hadn't thought about that. You mentioned that, and I hadn't thought about that in years because it's been such a long time that I've done that. Because now, like I said, with time, I just don't have the time.
Yeah, it's I only recently realized that maybe it's because I've had less time, but I finished a lot of like music and was like, all right, this is good. I was like, all right, I guess I gotta wait. And I was like, wait, what am I waiting for? I can write the lyrics right now. And I was like, my instinct was, no, we're gonna wait till we can go sit by the river and crank it out. And I did. And you know, that's, it just starts flowing when I'm outside. For, you know, sometimes they're terrible, sometimes they're good, but they don't flow at all inside my house. So,
well, let's listen to another one of your songs. Which one do you want to hear next?
Yeah, let's do La-Di-Da-Da.
La-Di-Da-Da. Okay, tell me the story behind that one.
La-Di-Da-Da was the second song that I ever brought to the band that was like, that I knew was, had to be fully like an acoustic guitar driven, very acoustic songwriter style song. And, I felt really confident about it, just because like I felt a lot of emotion when I was playing it right away. It's a song. Some of my songs are a little bit more straightforward, like "Don't Make Me Ask Again." Is a little bit more straightforward in what like every line is talking about. I think "La-Di-Da-Da" is about a lot of things. It's about, but in the end, I think for me, it's mostly about appreciating what you got while you got it, and not waiting for things to be taken away before you appreciate them. And I think the song is about like loss of, I think most people take it as a song about loss of a loved one. I was honestly thinking a lot about the philosophical concept of like, oh, everything can be taken away. Is like after when COVID happened, you know, I always took I put a lot of energy into my music career and trying to play music everywhere. And I thought it was a really noble way to spend my time, in an unpretentious, unselfish way to spend my time. But then I was told that I couldn't play music anymore and realized that even that could be like taken away from me. But then I realized that's only part of it can be taken away. You can't actually stop me from making music. And I ended up finding a lot of joy in writing and just with not even thinking that my songs would ever be heard ever again. Because, you know, we get more people listening to us live than we do online. And, you know, I was like, maybe these songs aren't even going to go anywhere ever again. It's just for me. It's just for the sake of making it and doing it right now. And I was able to find a lot of joy in that. So the song La Di Da Da is kind of asking myself to, like, find those couple of things that cannot be taken away from you, which is the internal process. You can take away the CDs, you can take away Spotify, and you can take away my ability to go to a concert venue and play, but it's really hard to stop me from actually just singing a song by myself when I'm like, even just, you know, singing outside without an instrument. So hold on to those things that cannot be taken away, because those are, you know, and in the end, those are going to be the most valuable things out there. Hopefully that explanation is not too all over the place for a song.
That's why I ask, because as funny as songwriters, you write a song about one thing and it mean completely something different. But that's the beauty of music, is you write it for you and let anybody else interpret how they need to.
Yeah. And I'm happy to do that. And it's like I said, like with cheating and music or anything, is like, you know, I've spent my whole life trying to learn how to create songs that affect me the way that other people's songs have affected me. And if I can make somebody feel anything at all, even if it is a little bit different from what I set out to do or totally different, it's like, man, if you can communicate an emotion to somebody, it's a really big honor that they're given, that they're letting your music into them in any capacity.
Oh yeah. My goal, I always thought of as like a songwriter, is one, I want to make them cry. And I've wrote a song somebody cried at. It was my daughter. She cried, but I had another guy almost cried. He said, I want to make them laugh. I got a song that makes them laugh. And I want a song that makes them hate me. And I wrote that, and I remember there's a lady that says, because after I played it, my wife is military, and she was gone for a year, so I wrote a song, Please Come Home. And when I was done, I played it one time out, and this lady goes, does he know what an ass he is? And I'm like, since the song's about me, I absolutely know how much of an ass he is. So I like the idea of making, of trying to bring emotion, so I understand it. But I'm going to mute us and play La-Di-Da. So La-Di-Da, is it La-Di-Da-Da?
La-di-da-da. Maybe okay. I should have dropped one of the da's from it.
La-di, okay. I'm gonna mute us. Just let me know when you hear it.
Oh, honey, let the roses wither away. Let all the smiles fade from their face. Let all the bars turn out their lights. We'll still sing la-di-da-da through the night. Tell me you love me when everything's wrong. I will keep singing these god-awful songs. Someday this train might pull off the train. Everything lost might find its way back. Sing la di da da, make a toast to your friends. Spill all your whiskey, fill it again. Sing la di da da, smash your glass up to heaven. Love all your friends. Might be the last time that you see him. Sing la di da 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 la di da. Oh, honey, let the roses wither away. And let all the children grow old and gray. Let all the bars put boards up on the doors. I got a flask in my pocket I've been saving it for. Oh, tell me you love me when everything's right. Push comes to shove, it turns to fights. Well, someday this train might make a wrong turn. burn. If it all goes to hell, let it burn, let it burn. Sing la di da da, make a toast to your friends. Spill all your whiskey, fill it again. Sing la di da da, smash your glass up to heaven. Remember this feeling, might be the last time that you feel it. Sing la di da da, make a toast to your friends. Tell them you love them, might be the last time that you see them. Sing la di da da. Let the roses wither away. Let all the smiles fade from their faces. And let all the bars turn out their lights. We'll still sing la di da da through the night.
Such a good groove.
Thank you,
man. Your range, like, that definitely wasn't Randy Newman style that way. That reminded me of somebody, but it was such a different range, and kind of like it just ebbed and flowed your voice, and everything you did was really, really good for that song. I really liked that. The visual that it gave me is so funny, because I like to visualize some stuff when I listen, and sometimes you can't, obviously, but other times you can. This one, it just made me think of watching like a time-lapse video or a old home movie video, and it's just going fast, you know, and that song is just playing over it. And man, that's
sad enough for me. Yeah. That's I appreciate you saying that. And it's, you know, again, it's that song does sound a lot different from the last one, and you know, a lot of it really is. Yeah, I follow the songs down where they go, and I've gotten a lot of criticism from, I think, really well placed criticism, and just like I think the benefits of going wherever the song goes is that it's a creative freedom, and I'm going to truly be excited about what I'm working on, because that's the sound in my head right now, and I need to get it out. But it makes marketing very difficult, because it's like, you know, if you want a song like that, if you go to the next song on our playlist, it's going to be an upbeat second line New Orleans song or a Randy Newman song. It's a little bit too unpredictable. And so when we get booked at festivals, you know, we can kind of chameleon ourselves into like any environment, because we've got a whole set of songwriter style songs. We got a whole set of funk music. We, you know, so we can kind of lean toward what we think the audience wants, but it makes it very difficult for marketing, because you don't know what to expect. And I think once you see us, and you know, once you listen to a whole album and take in a whole album or a whole show at its full value, if you watch a whole hour and a half concert of ours, or if you listen to a whole album, you're like, oh, that makes sense. It all the dots connect. But that's a lot to ask of a new fan. It's a lot to ask of a new person, is give this whole thing a chance, because we live in a day of, well, maybe people have never had attention spans, and I pretend like they used to, but there's definitely no attention spans now. And so you've got 30 seconds to communicate to me your entire musical identity when I'm scrolling through Spotify. And if I hear one thing that turns me off, you're dead to me, because I've got a million other artists waiting for me to listen to them. And that's just the reality of it today. And so, you know, I love chasing songs wherever they go, but it does make the marketing side difficult until people have learned that they can trust us and they should follow us down whatever path we want to go.
See, what I like about that, you're right about the marketing thing, but I think what it does is, because it is such a different, you guys are so unique in that you can do different styles, I think you gain probably fan here, fan there, from whatever style you're playing. Like, I'm listening to that song, maybe that's the style I love. That's okay, you got me. Somebody else comes in, you got Randy Newman style, you got him. And maybe that guy and me don't listen to the same music, but we are. And that's what I love about music. We are listening into like yours, because it's, I know that people want to market and they want to go like in a certain direction, and they want to, and as you get famous or whatever they say, and you know, and then they guide you or they direct you and they put you on a path. This is what you have to sound like. This is what you have to do. It takes away a lot of your creative freedom. And I think with your style, staying true to yourself comes across in the music.
Well, that's good to hear. That's all I really want to do at the end of the day is, you know, like I said, put out some music that makes me feel something. And then the next step is hopefully that's connecting with and making somebody else feel something too. And, you know, I've never been interested in marketing, and I've never been good at it. Right. And it's like, I want to, you know, I've had to learn about like women's retail fashion and different t-shirts. I didn't know there's multiple designs of tank tops.
I didn't either.
Different styles. I had no clue, and I could care less, but I got to order t-shirts for the band because we got to pay for recording and we got to sell, you know, it's part of all the periphery stuff that fills up the day, that takes away time from songwriting. It's just trying to keep it going. I wish I didn't have to think about the marketing and the songs just sold themselves, but you know, we've had people who want to support us and really want to help us and want to help us book shows or sell albums. And, you know, we get feedback just like, I don't know how to elevator. We're a difficult band to elevator pitch, I guess, because people want to know. You don't get an hour and a half introduction. You get 30 seconds. And so we're really appreciative of anybody that's taken the time to become a fan of ours. Is like, we used to not even do these like heavier songs and acoustic songs. We used to just kind of lean in toward, because we played a lot of bars when we were getting started. So it was whatever got the bar going is what we did. Mm-hmm. And that was really high energy, fun music. But then we got some actual fans who were like, I'm actually listening to you. And we felt like, you know, the meal didn't have real nutrients in it at some point. And we put this heavier element into it where it's like, no, you're not going to entertain a bar like right off the gate with that song. But if you can rope them in and then give them that song, they walk away with a lasting impression. And so once we added this other element, a little bit heavier, more nutritionally dense, emotionally music, I think it's really, really helped us connect with people on a deeper level. So, you know, we're figuring it out as we go.
Right. Well, you don't get into music to play the bars. That's just part of it. So, I mean, you have to get into like the breweries and stuff that want to do covers, which I'm not a big fan of covers. I know they have to be done but as a band, like I want to just do originals. Me, my stuff is more Southern rock, so it does fit with the bars. But you don't get into it thinking, okay, I want to go play at the bars. No, you want to get in it to make fans and to get your music heard and get it all over the place and just be yourself. And you mentioned it earlier, you got to have a team that helps you. And it does help to have somebody who can promote you, because we all have different hats as singers, songwriters, artists, bands. But we're good at some things. We're bad at others. I'm right there with you. Like, I didn't know anything about shirts. I have a daughter who has to tell me, like, I got two pair of jeans that I own, and I got t-shirts. So I grab whatever pair of jeans is clean and I grab a t-shirt. That's my wardrobe.
Yeah, that's about as simple as it needs to be. But then, man, different fabrics, and then the different style tank tops really, really opened my eyes of like, oh, this is one's a racer back and one's like a festival style, and you only wear this tank top if you're exercising, but this one's fashionable. And I was like, man, this is not what I wanted to be, what I got into this for. Playing bars was always pretty enticing to me because I might get a free pint of beer and $50, but the retail fashion was never in the on the agenda. Right. But it's here, and I appreciate everyone that buys a shirt. We stuck with the, if anyone's curious, we stuck with the festival style ladies tank tops.
Okay,
so that's the fashionable one apparently.
You mentioned merch. What's your best seller?
I mean, the t-shirts are, that's it. We've done, last year we did around, we were like, let's get some weird stuff. We got, my dream was always to get some matchbooks. I got this like logo that's got a skeleton who's like drinking a bottle with like X's on the front of it. And he's wearing a real cool suit. Kind of looks like a beatnik skeleton. And I wanted to get it on these like long cigar style, matches, but didn't pull that off completely because the printer could only do two colors. So we got these black and white matchbooks, we got coffee mugs, we got some hats. The hats didn't turn out good. We got all kinds of stuff, and we sat on it, a lot of it, for a while. And it's like people know what a band shirt is, and so they buy band shirts. And then CDs still sell, and I don't trust anybody's putting them in a CD player unless they've got a 1990s car still. But people will buy CDs at our shows just as, I think, as an excuse to support the band and throw a little bit of cash at us. And man, I wish people still bought CDs at the rate they did, because the profit margin, once you pay for the recording, CDs are really cheap to duplicate these days. It's like we can print CDs for $1, $1.50, $2 at the most, mm-hmm. sell them for $10 or $15. It's like, so we always stock CDs, and we always stock shirts, and yeah, we still got matches left over. We finally sold the hats, but you know, it's all about the band shirts. I'm wearing a band shirt right now, so that's how it goes.
And two, we got time for one more music, and then the kind of 20 question kind of game I like to play at the end. So, what's the last song that you want to do?
Share with us. It's a little bit longer. Is that all right? We see the time. Yeah,
I don't have time limit. You can go. Like I said, I get long winded. You can go whatever.
All right, Walking Off the Plank.
All right.
Number five right there.
And what's the story behind it?
So Walking Off the Plank was the first acoustic, like, songwriter-style song that I brought to the band, but I didn't even bring it on purpose. What happened was we played a festival in the middle of COVID. It was an outdoor festival. It was more of like a party. It was a privately run thing. At somebody who does music festivals, they had a party, and nobody had heard music live in months. And so people were just like ravenous for live music. And so we were supposed to play for an hour and a half. We played for 2 hours. They were like, play more. We played 2.5 hours. They were play more. We played 3 hours, 3.5 hours. We were probably up there for almost 4 hours. It's like 2 a.m. And we know a lot of music. We've been playing for a while. We know a lot. We were like out of music, and they were like, one more song, because they were just hadn't it what I took it personally and was so proud, but the truth is they hadn't heard music in a long time, so they were starving for it. But I was like, I got one song I can play. I'm gonna do this by myself. And I had the band walk off stage. I took the guitar player's electric guitar and played the song on electric guitar, and it felt amazing to play it. And I was like, that's when I got the spark in my head of like, we can add this into the band show if we can capture your attention with a more upbeat, in your face sound. I can break it down to this more intimate side of my songwriting, and I think everybody's happier at the end of it for that. So I brought it to the band and we worked on it. The song's about kind of telling the man to screw off. It's about it's kind of a rebellious song. It's kind of like my utopian dream of dropping out of society and doing things my own way. And I wrote it really frustrated and angry during COVID times and George Floyd protests. And it's a dream about just kind of giving up and starting over on your own.
I wouldn't hold my breath. I wouldn't hold my breath. He's gone. I worked an honest day. I signed my life away. A white picket dream. Well, I'm done. I'm walking off the plank. And I'm burning all my money. We're setting fire to the bankers. We're gonna move out to the country. I'm burning down the bridge. And I'm telling off the captain. Oh, I'm turning in my hammer. We're gonna move out to the country. A real stand-up man. A life insurance plan. The American dream. Well, I'm done. I tried to join your team, but you took everything. Well, you can fool me once. I'm done. I'm walking off the plane. I'm burning all my money. We're setting fire to the bankers. We're gonna move out to the country. Oh, I'm burning down the bridge. And I'm telling off the captain. Oh, I'm turning in my hammer. We're gonna move out to the country. I'm walking off the plane.
See, I don't mind a long song when it doesn't feel long, and that didn't feel long at all.
That's good. That's good. I had a vision for that, for like the, you know, starting out just like purely acoustic, totally stripped down, just one person, and then ending with like a giant marching band. And, you know, we went for it. There's not a lot of songs that do that. Maybe that's for a good reason, but we went for it. And, you know, I think that there's a lot of other ways we could do the song, but that's how we do it live. It's like real stripped down like that. And then we launch it at the end. And yeah, I'm glad it doesn't feel too long.
No, the structure of it is, I actually wrote down, I don't know if you see it, the I wrote structure of song at the bottom, because it was like, it was so good that it didn't, I'm rock. I'll let you hear one later. It's got a solo for acoustic and a solo for electric. I liked what you did because it kept it from becoming too long and repetitive, because I mean, there's not a lot of different wording that you have in there. You're kind of repetitive on stuff, but it doesn't feel that way because you have different style. You got that bass line going, and then you change up and you add stuff at the end. You got the harmonica going, and there's something new around each corner. And that, to me, is what makes a great song. And it doesn't matter the length. I mean, look at what was in the God of the Vita was 18 minutes long, right? Who cares?
Yeah.
Make it long as you want to.
Well, we do. We do. I'm a pretty long-winded talker. I'm a pretty long-winded songwriter.
Me too.
I'm amazed when if I write something that's like 3 minutes long, 3.5 minutes even. You know, 5 minutes for a while was like my standard, and I've cut back a good bit now. I'm a little bit more concise with it now, but yeah, I think sometimes it calls to be stretched out a little bit.
Yeah. And you're, I mean, you got a lot to say, but for me, I like to give, being in a band, I like to give the other band members times to shine. Right. So let them do their thing.
Yeah.
Play. I love that stuff. Well, I've had fun, Billy. It's been so much fun.
Yeah, appreciate you taking the time.
Sure. We're not quite done yet, but before we get like a little 20 question kind of game, tell everybody where they can find you, your social media, all that stuff.
This is, the name of the band is Hustle Souls, and we are pretty easy to find out there. Google it, Hustle Souls. We got hustlesouls.com. We're pretty active on Instagram. Just follow at Hustle Souls, Facebook, Hustle Souls at Gmail if you want to get a hold of us. And yeah, we're out there. We'd love to see you around. We play all over the East Coast, and we'd love to see you at a show sometime.
And like I said, I did something. You're gonna be my guinea pig for a game. I always all had like right. the always have the 20 question game that I always do anyway. But what I did is I have put them into a wheel. Guys, you can't see it, but he will. Like there's a 20 question kind of a wheel, right? And I put all the questions that I normally ask into this wheel. So we'll hit spin the wheel.
All right.
And your question will come up, and we'll do a couple that way. So
it's a little bit anxiety provoking.
Okay. Question. What is the weirdest trend you've ever participated in?
Well, I don't know if this is true. There's probably weirder, but I will. So I'm a, and when I was in fifth grade in 1999. And rollerblading, aggressive, like extreme rollerblading was like, you know, Disney Channel had movies about, the X Games were out, everybody was doing it back then. And I got diehard into it. And I still do it to this day. I've quit a bunch of times. I've broken many bones. And I'm a passionate rollerblader. So I'll say that's it's definitely a trend when I got into it. It's definitely not a trend anymore. I think that's what makes it weird now, is that it's very not trendy thing for a grown man to do.
See, it's funny you say that, because when I was a kid, it's roller derby, right? Where they have the racing around on the rink and they're fighting.
Yeah.
I was 99. I had a kid. My kid was already 4 years old. When I was a kid and around teenage time, they had roller derby. That was like a big thing that they would do, because they had skating rinks. You would go around and do skating rinks. But I mean, they would have like literally teams and leagues of roller derbies where these girls would just beat the hell out of each other. You know,
it's coming back a little bit. It's coming back. It's the roller rinks are super hip these days. And, you know, I think it's making a little comeback, but it makes sense. You know, it's a fun thing to do. You dance around in a circle. I did more like the skate park extreme sport side of it. But, you know, here in Asheville, if you go down to like our greenway by the river, there's hundreds of people roller skating and rollerblading up and down it. So it's on its way back.
Yeah, I'm in a wood. You can't really do anything in here but ride motorcycles and four wheelers.
The woods is the place to be. That's where I wish I was, but I'm still living around people for now.
All right. See, this one I do is I'm gonna keep this because I like the way it goes. All right, I'm gonna spin it again. I need to put the sound on there so everybody can hear like the wheel of the Price is Right.
Yeah, that needs a sound effect.
What are three things on your bucket list?
One, moving to the woods is a big thing I would like to do. One of the things I had to do was give my wife a baby before we could move to the woods. And we got our baby in February. And so, yeah, that I would love to get out of town a little bit into the mountains. Would love to get some more traveling in. I travel a lot with a band, but it's all on the East Coast of the United States. And it's like, I'm so busy and my work is so gig based that I'm always afraid to like take off. And I would like to get over to like Europe or like Northern Africa, South America. I mean, I would love to see the world a little bit more than I've been able to in the past like 10 years. And then a third bucket list item is there's a trumpet I'd really like to buy that is a little bit out of my price range. That's a pretty achievable goal someday, but it's an Edwards X13 trumpet is like kind of calling my name as soon as I can find $5,000 or $6,000 sitting around. If you know anybody who's got some, they can throw at me for a horn.
Right.
But there's my bucket list right there.
Now we mentioned earlier about you like coming to Georgia sometime. If you do, there's places around here that would, I think you'd be great at. They got Mad Life here at Woodstock, and there's a Rootstock. Woodstock is an area that's got a lot of places that you would do good. Breweries, they're all over the place. I mean, there's tons of them. There's every city has one or two different breweries. Reformation Brewery has like one in Smyrna, Woodstock, Canton. They're everywhere. So I think if you do come here, let me know. I'd love to compete.
Yeah, if I can send you an email, get a list from you or something like that. Yeah. That would be very helpful. Yeah.
Of course. I tell everybody, like I said, what I do here is like the only thing I ever ask of the guest is one, share it with everybody, and two, pay it forward. So I always tell people to send me a list of other singer, songwriters, bands that we should know. And I'll play them. But yeah, if you need a list, if you need anything from me, and that goes for anybody that's listening, that's been on the show before, just ask. All you got to do is ask me. I get too busy to think about it. But if you ask me, I'll get you. I'll take care of you.
All right. Sweet. All right.
I turn on the sound effect now.
There it is. That
sounds like, what's the weirdest dream you've ever had?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if I should say that publicly on here. So I'm going to give another answer. I had a dream. Last night it was pretty. This is the second time recently this has happened. One time, the first time it was Tyler Childers, and last night it was Sierra Ferrell. And I'm watching them on stage, and they're just killing it. And they're singing the best song I've ever heard. And it was Sierra Ferrell, who I'm a big fan of. And I was just like dumbfounded by how amazing she was. And then I woke up and was like, that's not her song. And I wrote the whole song in my dream for myself. And so I laid in bed and started trying to copy down the song and sing the melody that she was singing. And that's what I was writing before I hopped on here. I was trying to mess around with that. I ended up ditching the whole thing because I forgot. It was a good song that I wrote, but all I got was like two halfway decent lines out of it. But last night was a good concert, I'll tell you that.
It's funny you say that. I had a dream like that. I had a dream two nights ago about a song. I actually remembered some of it, so I wrote it down. But I had a dream probably 6-7 months ago. I was at a concert talking to Rihanna. I guess it's Rihanna. So Rihanna, talking to Rihanna, and we're jamming and listening to this great song. And I realized it's my band's song. I'm like, oh my God. And then it is a good song. And so I had it in my dream, and I woke up and it's still in my head. So I go try to play it. By the time I get from the bed to the living room, because it's 3 o'clock in the morning, I don't wake my wife up. I lost it. I was like, oh, such a good song.
Every time you always lose some of it there. So the Tyler Childers one, I ended up catching most of it was a chorus, and I had the whole melody in the chorus. I had the melody and the lyrics for the chorus, and then I had to go rewrite in my waking life. I had to rewrite all the lyrics, but it's a real song. I finished it. I recorded it. I'm going to release it pretty soon under my solo project name, Kid Billy. But you can catch some of it, but you always are going to lose some of that. But I'm a genius songwriter in my dreams. I'm yep. way better than I am in real life.
My wife
jealous of that skill.
Well, my wife sent me something. I'm trying to find out what it was. There was somebody does some kind of dream therapy kind of thing where they basically you meditate and it puts you in that state where as songwriters, we're like our best, you know, the zone, and you can actually yeah. remember and play it. So I don't remember what it's called, but
it would be cool if you could hack it. Yeah. I don't right. know how to do it.
I'm going to figure it out. We'll figure it out. All yeah. right. A couple more questions and that'd be it for the conversation. One more spin the wheel. And then I have one question I always ask at the end. You kind of touched on what's your dream vacation?
I would love to go real far. You know, I think I, for some reason, like, Northern, like Mediterranean, Africa, like area sounds great. But usually when I go on vacation, I go down to New Orleans. I got some friends down there and I just love the food, the music, the culture, the community. There's a lot of just super interesting people down there. And it's just a really inspiring place to go. And I always come back like feeling a little bit more inspired to just be my true self and make a lot of music. So New Orleans is my spot basically every time I want to go on vacation.
Okay. And a question I always ask at the end, I don't even need the wheel for this. What's the best advice you ever got?
Of course, save the hard ones for last, don't you? Oh man. I don't, best advice I've ever gotten. I'm such like a stickler for like the, being precise with language. And it's like, is this the best advice I ever got? I don't know. But this is one thing that's coming to my head right now that I think about a lot. You know, the rapper Mac Miller, he's who passed away. He was talking in some interview that came up on scrolling through Instagram or YouTube or something. And he's talking about his career. And I think we've kind of talked on it. It's like trying to define my sound or define your sound. You're too all over the place. And then trying to impress the bar crowd and then realizing, oh, that they want this more and I need to give them more of this. I need to do more Aretha Franklin. I need to do more Tyler Childers. I need to lean more into this. And he's talking about kind of chasing that with his music. And one of his producers said to him, like, the closer you get to who you are, the better it's going to be. And so instead of thinking about what do I want my music to sound like and like what genre I want it to be, thinking about who am I as a human being and as an artist and what do I have to say and what do I want to say and how can I say that as authentically as possible. And as long as I'm aiming inward toward being as true to my music is representing me as a person, as true as I am. And I'm all over the place. So my music's going to be all over the place. But the closer I can get to myself, and this is what Mac Miller is saying, the closer I can get to myself, the better the product becomes and the more marketable the product becomes. It's like flipping it on its head. It's like if you chase what is marketable, you're going to become less marketable. It's an inverse thing. So if you just be you, and the closer you get to being, and that's an easy thing to say. It's actually very difficult to figure out who you are as a human and as an artist, and then to try to create a piece of art that reflects that or comes as a product of knowing who you are is almost impossible, and almost nobody pulls it off. But I think everyone that you love as an artist has pulled it off to some extent. And so I'm saying out loud, I'm like, yeah, that's some pretty damn good advice. So I think.
I like the way you said that, because I mean, you think about it, if you're chasing the market changes all the time. So yes. how can you chase something that you don't know the end of it?
Yeah. So the closer you get to yourself, the better it is, because it does, you know, I like a lot of music. I don't have one artist or one genre that I like. I like a lot of stuff. That's because it's not the marketable aesthetic of the genre and the moment that I like. Mm-hmm. It is that artist being who they are. And that artist might be a wild party fuel, like dance thing. It might be punk rock anarchy. It might be really sentimental, like emotionally driven acoustic music. It might be, whoever they are, if a human being stands up and says, this is who I am on a stage, people will connect with it. Even if it's not me being represented, I'm going to say, wow, this is really amazing watching this person be themselves and show who they are. So I think that's the best advice I've ever gotten. I just got to learn how to take it. Yeah.
Well, I've had fun, buddy. It's been a really good interview. Good to meet you.
Good to meet you. And I'm gonna send you an email, and maybe we'll see you down in Georgia someday.
Yeah, and we'll talk about off air. But before we do that, tell everybody where they can find you, all your social media stuff again.
Yeah, once again, Hustle Souls is the name of the band. We're on all the streaming platforms, Instagram, Facebook, and HustleSouls.com, HustleSouls@gmail.com. And yeah, we'll see you out there.
All right, everybody, this is Georgia Songbirds, and we're talking to Mr. Billy Litz from Hustle Souls. Thank you, Billy.
Thank you.